This is the case of Big Blue Express, Inc. versus Department of Revenue. We're going to begin today with introductions from the court. I am Mike Havokin, the Chief Justice, and now by seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Good morning, Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik, good morning.
John Frankenberg.
Counsel, Mr. Ottoman, are you with us here today?
Yes, I am.
Good morning to you. Just one moment before you proceed. Mr. Bartel, you're with us today. Very good. Counsel, I should note that Justice Miller Lerman will be participating on the briefs on this case and the rest of the cases for today. While you are seated, please keep your masks on. When you are presenting to the court, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin? Very good. Then, Mr. Ottoman, you may approach and you may proceed.
All right. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Matthew Ottoman. I'm here representing appellant Big Blue Express Incorporated, which I'll refer to as Big Blue Express in my argument. This case is an appeal of a decision by the Nebraska Tax Commissioner, which was affirmed by the Lancaster County District Court, imposing Nebraska use tax on Big Blue Express purchase of a fractional interest in an airplane. The key issue in the case is whether Big Blue Express purchase of the fractional interest qualified as a non-taxable sale for resale transaction. The tax commissioner denied that the purchase of the fractional interest qualified as a sale for resale for two reasons. First, the tax commissioner alleged that the purchase of property that is leased to a related party cannot constitute a sale for resale. Second, the commissioner alleged that Big Blue Express did not meet all statutory conditions on that purchase to be a for the purchase to be a sale for resale. I'll address each of these. The Department of the Tax Commissioner's first contention is a wholly legal contention and is based on a faulty interpretation, section 77-2704.28.
Have we ever construed that statute?
Not in terms of this point, not in terms of that I'm aware of in terms of this. In fact, we're somewhat aware of other transactions that have occurred, but not seeing the court has construed it in this context. Now that statute, 77-2704.28, establishes an exemption on lease payments between related parties when the lessor has paid tax on the purchase of the property. Now the second sentence is key, and so I'll quote it. It says, such lessor company shall have the same sales and use tax liability on the purchase of property to be leased to the lessee company as the lessee company would have paid if the lessee company had purchased the property directly. Now, the department contends that that sentence disqualifies property that may be leased to a related party from constituting a non-taxable sale for resale exemption. Now, the district court correctly held that the department's interpretation of that statute was wrong for multiple reasons. First, we'd say probably most important, a non-taxable sale for resale is defined not to be gross receipts to which the sales and use taxes apply. That exemption from 77-2704.28 is second order, meaning it may apply if a transaction is otherwise taxed. Because sales for resale are not taxable gross receipts in the first place, they are not taxable whether or not other exemptions would apply. Second, the department's interpretation would read the term such out of the second sentence of that statute. The department wants that second sentence to apply to all companies that rent property, regardless of whether they use that exemption. And the department effectively wants that to be a tax imposition clause hiding in the middle of a tax exemption statute. We don't think that's where the legislature would put it. In fact, I
want to ask you a quick question just to make sure we're clear. There's no opposition by the appellant that all the leases in the situation were closely related corporations. Is that correct?
That's right. Many of them, they were all related, somehow related to the lessor.
So that's not an issue before us today.
No.
Thank you.
In fact,
whether there's one more issue.
Sure.
If we agree ultimately that a use tax is owed, do you have any dispute with the amount of the deficiency alleged in this case? Any dispute with the calculation itself, the math?
We do, Your Honor, and that's under the doctrine of equitable recoupment. And what's been happening was Big Blue did not pay tax on its purchase of the aircraft or the airplane. It then was collecting sales tax from the related party lessees on each of the lease payments. And so we think under the doctrine of equitable recoupment, that sales tax that was paid by those related parties and collected by Big Blue should be credited against any use tax that's owed. And that doctrine of equitable recoupment would apply here, that they have sufficient kind of privity in terms of their relationship, that should apply. And there's authority by the U.S. tax court and other federal courts would say that doctrine should apply.
So if the sales and use tax have been paid initially by Big Blue, does a regulation preclude the payment of taxes or use tax by the lessee then at that point?
That's right. The statute set up two options for those related party lessees. The first is, as Big Blue took, no tax on the initial purchase of the property, tax on the lease payments, just as any other lessor in business would do, right? If I'm buying something to lease it to other people, I buy it exempt from tax, and then I'm collecting tax on the lease payments. The second way is to say, all right, we are going to have the initial purchase be taxable, and then under that 77-2704.28, each of those payments then would not be subject to tax. One way or another, the state's going to get its tax from the end user. There's just two options that the legislature set.
The way the department's suggesting now, is there a possibility of double taxation?
We think there could be a possibility of double taxation. That's right. Because what they had argued for is to say, if someone is leasing property, for example, to not only related parties, but the other people, you could buy them on sale for resale. Okay. You're collecting tax from everyone else. Then in the department's philosophy, if you're leased it to a related party, you have to go back and pay tax on the initial purchase of the property. All the while, you're still collecting lease payments from other parties. So you'd have effectively a double tax situation under the department's theory in that circumstance, which could happen, we think, relatively frequently. We don't think that's what the legislature intended. And we don't think that's what the statutes are providing.
If they would have set the system was set by Big Blue, and they set up all these leases so that they would fall under this exemption or this rule that you've set forth, but then they never actually execute, and no one ever actually falls through with the lease, would that change the situation?
Yeah, I think at that point you'd say there wasn't really a purchase for resale there, because you weren't really trying to lease it. That's not what happened here. Big Blue did lease it and collected tax on the lease payments it collected.
But not sufficient lease amounts to recoup what the state would have got in sales tax.
Well, it takes time, as does all leased property. It takes a certain period of time. We don't think the time that was set up in here is unreasonable. I think the state has said in their briefs that it would have taken 15, 16 years. That's, based on the usage, we'd say for an aircraft, which could last 30, 40 years, that's not unreasonable at all.
Why did Big Blue need capital infusions from 2011 to 2013?
Sure. And we've acknowledged in here, sometimes the invoicing wasn't perfect, and there were some times that it needed capital infusions. We'd say there's a number of business entities that are out there that sometimes need capital infusions for all sorts of reasons. There are businesses that
they needed it because their invoicing was lazy?
I think that there's no doubt the invoicing was a part of it. I think they also needed it to run their operations. I think people, businesses get revenue from all sorts of places, some of which.
Where did Big Blue exclusively get its revenue from?
It was getting its revenue from lease payments.
Anywhere else?
No, it was a lessor. It was set up to lease, the plane. And like we'd say, other businesses sometimes need capital infusions from their parent. Businesses sometimes choose not to delay collections for all sorts of business reasons. And we'd say that's what happened here.
The amount of lease hours have an impact on the need for infusion cash?
There's no doubt. I think, yeah, if it was fully leased, I think there's no doubt it would have gotten more revenue in. But we don't think the amount of lease hours that it had were unreasonable in terms of leasing a plane. I know the department likes to contend that it can kind of set its own judgment up as to how much lessor should act toward leasing it. We'd say the amount of hours that it was doing was reasonable, that it, in terms of the invoicing, while it was a bit slow, it didn't lose anything in terms of its ability to lease or to invoice. When it was issuing invoices, it was collecting on those.
What do we make of the fact that sometimes it invoiced it at a rate below the contractual rate? What significance does that have to our analysis?
There were a few times for limited reasons that it did go below what it was kind of primarily thinking of as a fair market lease. It wasn't significantly below. I think it was 1100 versus 1300. And lots of businesses can give small discounts for all sorts of reasons. That's part of being in business. Sometimes you charge one rate, and to certain customers or certain situations, you choose to go down that rate. That wasn't a significant part of what was happening here with Big Blue, we would say. All right, I see I have a minute left. I'd like to reserve the bulk of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bartel, good morning to you.
Good morning, may it please the court. While the court below correctly found that Big Blue did not meet its burden to prove qualification for the sale for resale exemption, it erred in finding the specific statute addressing the exemption of leases between related entities did not control. We've raised that issue on cross appeal and submit it is dispositive. When property is purchased and leased to a related entity, 772704.28 provides that the lessor does not qualify for any sales and use tax exemptions other than those that can be claimed by the lessee had the lessee purchased the property directly. Big Blue as lessor entered into a use or lease agreement with a related entity, Checkpoint Payment Processing, DBA PowerPay. Under the plain language of the second sentence of the statute for leases involving related entities, the lessee must have a valid exemption for the lessor's purchase to be exempt. If not, then the lessor must pay sales or use tax on the purchase of the property. Because Checkpoint or PowerPay had no exemption, Big Blue was liable for use tax on its purchase. The court below erred in concluding that the related entity exemption was not applicable because a sale for resale is not separately stated as an exemption, but is an exclusion from the definition of gross receipts. That ignores this court's recognition that sales for resale are an exemption from sales and use tax. I would direct the court to the decisions in Intralot versus Department of Revenue, 276 Nebraska 708, and Nucor Steel versus Leuenberger, 233 Nebraska 863, cited on page 15 of the appellee's brief. So the sale for resale exemption must be interpreted along with the other statutes granting exemptions. 772704.28 is the specific statute applicable to leases between related entities. And as a specific statute on this subject matter, it controls over the general sale for resale exemption.
Mr. Ottoman, I think, characterized this as a tax hidden in a tax exemption. What is your response to that?
As a hidden?
Included in the middle of an exemption statute. Maybe I misunderstood what he was.
I mean, I think that goes to how you read the relationship between the first and second sentences. The district court, we believe, erred in reading the term such lessor company in the second sentence of the statute to mean a lessor qualifying for exemption in the first sentence. We submit that's incorrect because the exemption in the first sentence applies to the lessee's qualification for exemption and not the lessor when the qualifications for exemption in the first sentence are met. That's so because the legal incidence of the tax is on the purchaser, and in a lease transaction, the lessee is the purchaser. While the first sentence provides an exemption for the lessee, the second sentence imposes tax on purchases by lessors that property, the lease property to a related entity, as set out in the first sentence.
What's the significance of the word such? What's that referring
to? Such lessor company, we submit, refers to a lessor under the first sentence. It's the word such, we don't believe, has the significance they seek to attach to it. We think it necessarily means a lessor company for purposes of the first sentence.
What, if anything, does the legislative history tell us that might help in statutory interpretation if we decide that's necessary?
I don't believe either side has relied on legislative history here.
That's why I'm asking you now.
I guess my take on the legislative history is it's really not significant, and that the plain language here controls, and we don't need to go to secondary source like legislative history.
The plain language is difficult to reconcile as between the first and the second sentence. What does the legislative history tell us?
I can't say that it says anything directly that would contradict our position. I just haven't, I didn't look at it prior to this because no party actually relied upon it. We don't think it's necessary to go to legislative.
Has this statute changed over time, evolved over time?
It has been amended. I don't recall the specifics, but it hasn't been amended, yes.
The second sentence always been part of it?
I don't believe so. It looks like it was goes back to 1992 and 1993, but unfortunately I don't recall, Your Honor. But we think the correct interpretation is that lessees are exempt from paying tax on leases where related lessors have paid tax on the property. When a related lessor has not paid the tax, the lessor is liable unless the related lessee could claim an exemption if it purchased the property directly. And here there's no dispute that PowerPay is a related entity, it was a lessee, and it didn't qualify for any exemption. So we think Big Blue obviously owed tax under this statute. It's the specific statute that controls, and you don't need to get to the sale for resale exemption. Now, if you do get to the sale for resale exemption, we think the district court correctly found that they did not meet their burden to prove entitlement. To qualify for that exemption, Big Blue had to prove it purchased the aircraft for the sole purpose of reselling it in the normal course of its business. And again, business is defined as any activity engaged in by any person with the object of gain, benefit, or advantage, direct or indirect. The district court made a number of factual findings supporting the conclusion that the aircraft was not purchased with the object of gain, benefit, or advantage to Big Blue. Among those are, one, Big Blue never came close to leasing the aircraft for the number of hours necessary to break even, let alone make a profit. Two, Big Blue required substantial cash infusions due to the anemic leasing activity. Three, Big Blue's billing and collection practices were best described as disinterested and suggested that Big Blue's purpose in buying the airplane was not to realize a gain in profit. And four, Big Blue, despite bleeding cash, made very little effort to market itself to potential lessees.
Is it your position that Big Blue didn't have a business?
If it had a business at all, it was basically, as the district court found, it wasn't to purchase the aircraft, and this is from the district court order, not to lease to others at market rates, but predominantly the purpose was to convenience Mr. Schneider, who personally accounted for more than half the flight hours, and his other business pursuits. So I think that was the purpose. It wasn't to market this or lease it to others. And obviously these factual findings by the district court are supported by the record. Your review is limited to error review, and therefore I don't believe the court should engage in reweighing the evidence. Those findings support the district court's decision. There are a number of other facts that we could point to. We discussed in our brief to indicate that this was not a legitimate sale for resale. Again, I think the timing of events here is somewhat significant. The aircraft was purchased in 2011, and yet in 2011 and 2012, there were few uses. Most were by Mr. Schneider personally, and invoices were not timely issued, nor were they timely paid. It wasn't until July of 2013 when the department sent a letter to Big Blue inquiring about the taxability of its purchase of the aircraft, that things started to change. Then in July, after that, July 15, 2013, Big Blue entered into a use agreement with Tamarack. Then Tamarack did use the plane 5 times after that. Mr. Schneider used it 4 times. And again, they started to finally issue invoices and receive payment. But again, this lag in invoice issuance and payment is significant. Again, this isn't operating like a normal business. Normal businesses don't operate that way. They need to get invoices out and get paid to generate revenue. It's not consistent, again, with a leasing business or any other business.
Before your time expires, would you address the equitable recoupment argument?
Certainly, Your Honor. We don't believe equitable recoupment can apply for the simple reason that the right to receive a credit or refund in Nebraska is statutory, and that remedy is exclusive. So it doesn't leave room for granting equitable relief.
So if there's a sales and use tax owed by Big Blue, and these lessees paid a sales and use tax, did they have the right to recoup what they paid? Is this just a double taxation?
It's
by accident?
We don't submit it's double. Number one, the use tax on the transaction of purchasing the plane that's owed by Big Blue is separate and distinct from any sales tax on the lease transactions paid by the lessees. The lessees would have
would the lessees owe any money if they used the plane if Big Blue had paid their sales and use tax?
If sales tax had been paid up front?
Right. Is that what you're asking, that sales and use tax be paid by Big Blue up front?
No, the use tax, again, it's a different transaction. To the extent that the lessees, as the only person who could claim a credit or refund is the person who's paid the tax. And so that's one of the reasons why Big Blue cannot use this, receive a credit or refund itself for the tax paid by the lessees. The legal incidence of that tax was on the lessees. What they're asking for is an equitable form of relief outside of what the statute allows for a credit or refund. And we don't think equitable relief is available because the statutory remedy is exclusive. And to the extent that equitable recoupment has been recognized by some courts, there are certain elements that aren't here. We don't think that there is the same transactional identity because you've got the use tax on the purchase versus the sales tax on the lease. And you don't have strict identity of interest because while there's relationships between Big Blue and—
You're alleging they're closely held, they're—
Yes, for, again—
Interchanging, they're the same people.
There are connections, but again, they're separate legal entities. And
you're saying that connection is so strong that they can't be the same. They can't be the business that's operating and leasing to these people.
Well, for purposes of equitable recruitment, that's distinct from the related entity statute. In other words, there is a related entity here for purposes of that statute in terms of power pay. But when you're talking about recoupment, and the case law is saying there has to be identity of interest between the parties in order for that to apply, we cite some cases from other states, admittedly, that say there has to be a strict identity. And so, for example, if you have a parent and a sub, they are separate legal entities, so you don't have the necessary identity to apply the doctrine.
So did these lessees owe a use tax or a sales tax, no matter what Big Blue did or didn't do?
Yes, because, well, no, because under the statute that if the lessor paid the tax, if they were related, they would not, okay, under 7724.028.
But they did pay.
They did pay. There's no question about that.
Are they entitled to a refund? That's the question.
They would be out of time, I believe, to claim a refund because these transactions go back to 2013 at the latest.
So the state receives double taxation.
Because of the way Big Blue handled the transaction, yes, that's how
penalty they have to
call it a penalty. They're different transactions, but yes. Unless there are further questions, we would ask you to find that the related lease exemption applies here and precludes relief to Big Blue, and alternatively to affirm the district court finding on sale for resale. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
2 seconds.
52 seconds, Mr. Ottoman.
I'm going to make it the longest 52 seconds.
Morning again, justices. I did want to just cover a quick few things. First, Mr. Bartel had mentioned that the Interlock case was supporting his position that sale for resale is actually exemption. I think we demonstrated in our briefing that, in fact, that supports our position that it's setting up a non-saleable transaction. We did want to touch, too, on the district court's opinion about Big Blue's business. And it really found that Big Blue was not engaged in business without creating its own test. You know, the department has proposed a test from the Devonair case in Michigan, which we would purport is completely unworkable, at least under Nebraska law, because it requires someone to show a comparative analysis between what they did and other likewise lessors. And it's impossible, frankly, for us to be able to go subpoena what other lessors are getting in terms of their revenue and their operations. And likewise, the department knows that information, but is forbidden by law from providing that to the court. So the Devonair test is effectively unworkable, at least under Nebraska law, because we can't get the facts necessary to show one of the factors. So we have what we think is an arbitrary decision without a test for whether someone's in business or not. We also think it's a dangerous precedent for this court to again say that someone's not in business. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. That concludes arguments in Big Blue Express Inc. versus Department of Revenue. Hence, you are excused. Please, when you are leaving the courtroom today, use the side door to the court's left and to your right.